Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. On this weekend show, we're going to be sticking a little bit more to company-specific news that move the needle for a couple stocks that we follow, as well as some trading strategies for broad averages and a wide range of sectors. We start off the show with Brian Lenny, founder of the Junior Stock Review website, and then we're following Brian up with a more general conversation with Dana Lyons, fund manager, to take us through what sectors he sees opportunities in. So we're kicking off with Brian Lenny. Now, Brian, we want to start off by simply talking about a couple key news events that have come out of the resource sector. The first one being G Mining merging with Reunion Gold, or essentially emerging with Reunion Gold. Here's the company will be taking over Reunion's projects as they are just completing their own mine in Brazil. I know you follow G Mining closely in your newsletter and to your subscribers. Explain to us what you think of this deal where a company really is doubling in size.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I do like this deal. I think it's a fantastic deal. And it's one that actually caught me by surprise. I wasn't expecting, I thought there might be a deal coming or in place at some point, because when I talked to LP in a call, he had said right from the beginning that they wanted to expand and add value to a development project. But they truly went big game hunting with a merger or acquisition of Reunion. You know, 4 million ounces, roughly 2 grams per ton, open pittable. This is sort of what world-class looks like, I think, in gold deposits right now. And you can say what you want about the jurisdiction, but I think that this is a big deal. And especially with they're going to have production at Tocantinzinho, like you said, probably in the next 3 months, 4 months, they're in a tremendous position to generate cash flow and then develop what is basically, I would say, close to a world-class deposit at Oko. And yeah, this is a great deal. And you know, I think for investors that are looking for growth, this is one of those deals where you've got probably or arguably the best mine building team out there. And that was my original premise of investing with Tocantinzinho. It wasn't because I loved Tocantinzinho, but it was because I thought the probability of these guys being successful and putting into production was quite high. And now you've got an asset that's going to be producing and world-class development asset. And I think there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on G Mining. So for me, this is a deal that puts them directly on the map and directly in line with becoming, you know, the gold sector's next mid-tier for guys that are looking for growth and, you know, a midpoint in risk. I think it lines up great.
Yeah, Brian, it's nice to see them massing up. And just when you thought it was exciting enough with them going into first gold pour soon, you know, in the next quarter or so, they do this big transaction. You said in the onset, though, you can say what you want about the jurisdiction. Let's talk about Guyana, because there has been a lot of action there recently. Mako Mining just took over Gold Source Mines in Guyana. We just had Omai Gold Mines on there. They've got a big 4 million ounce resource as well. And Guyana as a country just made that huge oil discovery about a decade ago that's changing the country. What do you think about diversifying into Guyana?
I think it's more like this. I think South America can be tough. And I think a lot of these jurisdictions in there, whether it's Guyana, Brazil, Peru, Chile, most of them have this sort of cycle when they're in favor or out of favor, or maybe investable and not investable. I would say, you know, I partially agree with you. Like, I think there's a lot of good things that are going on for Guyana right now. That oil find just off the coast, I think, is going to bring a lot of money to the country. And of course, you know, Venezuela, that sort of fight, I don't even know where that is necessarily in terms of how the Venezuela and them are arguing about who owns it. But I think, you know, it's things like that sort of cast maybe a little bit of doubt on my end in terms of the viability of the place as a jurisdiction. But you know what? You've got like a world-class mine building team that's going in there. And these guys, this is not their first rodeo when it comes to, you know, developing something inside the Guyana Shield, which of course includes Guyana as a country. So they know how to operate there. And I think they're going to make the right decisions when it comes to how to deal with the government and the local communities. And, you know, Brazil, Tocantinzinho is the perfect example of how they've already benefited or constructed fairly in a, what can be a tough jurisdiction. You know, Brazil to me is sort of in that same spectrum of risk as Guyana, and they've made it work. So a lot goes to the management team and their success and their past success in these jurisdictions. And so for me, I'm much more apt to be comfortable with a deal like this, just because I have so much confidence in the G Mining team. And I think Guyana, you know, could be on the precipice of being something more significant than it is today and have less trepidation from investors. But I don't think that, you know, we should be completely blind to the risks, because whether it's Guyana, like I said, Peru, Chile, we've seen risk in all of them. And you know what, more and more jurisdictional risk is ubiquitous. You know, Canada and the States have their own spectrum of risk. So it's out there everywhere. You have to be aware of it. But again, it comes back to the team, I think, in this particular deal. And I'm quite comfortable going in there and being invested in G Mining.
So what are the catalysts you're looking for news flow-wise, balancing out the first pour cash flow from Tocantinzinho and then also the then building of this other asset? What do you watch for news flow-wise that kind of confirms this thesis that you like this move?
The first gold pour is definitely the first thing. And then you look for declared commercial production. I think those are the two things where you could, especially at this gold price, I think there is definitely some money to be made on that differential. And then I think, you know, when the deal closes, then I think the speculative upside can be kind of put into high gear. And again, I think it's kind of gold price dependent, because, you know, the interest is definitely spiked with this latest push. But you know, if we go back and don't maintain these levels, then maybe you see sort of an outflow. But I think the speculative is on the gold pour, the commercial production, and then how they outline their plan for Reunion once the deal is actually closed. Because I'll just add this, is that I think, again, this is about as good as it gets when it comes to projects out there that aren't owned by majors already. And so my guess is that this was on, you know, the likes of Barrick as a possible target at some point in the future. So I would almost guarantee they're looking at the deal and seeing if it makes sense for them to come in over the top. So I would look for that deal closing to be maybe the third point into speculative upside into G Mining. And then, of course, once they actually do own it, they're going to outline the plan and the sort of the timeline to getting that thing developed. And it's quite exciting.
Brian, it kind of brings up a general question about M&A in the sector and these development projects getting scooped up. A lot of people bemoan the fact that they haven't seen M&A in their stock yet. But if we look across the board, there's been a lot of M&A. You know, looking at Sabina being taken out by B2 Gold, looking at Gold Standard Ventured and Contact Gold being taken out by Orla Mining, looking at Marathon being taken out by Calibre, Osino's being taken out. I mean, now you've got Reunion Gold taking out. Is there an experience where some of these bigger producers better get on the stick soon before all the dates get invited to the prom?
Yeah, of course. And I think that's sort of where the excitement should be, is to see how this really could kind of spur or spiral into sort of a frenzy. Again, especially if the gold price stays where it is, then a lot of the valuations for these companies is much higher in terms of the discrepancy between value and price. So I think that is what I think a lot of people, you know, the Lassonde curve is very real. And I think all the companies you basically described are all mostly companies that are in that sort of orphan period or the trough of the curve. And there's not as much interest, and therefore a lot of retail aren't in it. But the big funds, there's definitely smart money that look at companies when nobody cares. And, you know, so they've made money. And so I think it's just a matter of time before that trickles down. And in that frenzy type of moment, you're going to see probably these bigger companies and the mid-tiers look at less developed. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to have a feasibility study for them to want to buy it. But I think that takes more, you know, action in the market overall, and probably valuations in the equities go up, which is kind of odd, right? Because you would think that senior mining companies would want to maybe buy as much as they can when the prices are low, but it doesn't always, you know, end up that way. But it should be interesting. And I do expect to see more deals and more and more as, you know, people, money floods into the sector. I think you're going to see the deals kind of frenzy, and they'll trickle down into some of the more speculative companies that are out there.
And that just keeps building on itself, too. That's an exciting market when we do see that kind of action. Let's move over to another company that released news earlier this week. Abra Silver released a $20 million strategic investment from Kinross and Central Porto. This is 4% stake for each of those companies. So it's just an early on kind of starter position for Kinross. But they did also form a regional partnership in Argentina with Kinross to look at new assets. What were your thoughts on this deal and Kinross entering the story?
I think it's a great deal. And I think that the percentages from both companies set up really nicely for Abra Silver share price to appreciate. And if everything goes well, for those positions to be added to at higher prices. First, like on the Porto, whatever the energy utilities company is, I forget the exact name, but, you know, I think that's a passive investment, meaning that, you know, they're just happy to kind of diversify their portfolio within Argentina and obviously see the value in Diblilos and, you know, want some exposure to it. So I don't think you see that position expand. I also don't think you're going to see them dump that on, you know, a 30% rise. It's going to be sticky hands. On the Kinross side of things, Kinross has not been afraid to acquire or put their finger into different companies. We've seen a number of deals done, Great Bear being probably the latest and greatest. But a 4% position, I think, is that sort of tepid move in where it's not that big in saying that, oh, yeah, you know, this is definitely something we want to buy. But it shows that they're interested. And I think that, you know, as long as Argentina continues on its path to open up, the most important point, that cash can flow in and out of the country freely without these, you know, blue chip swaps and these other kind of deals where companies have to get money in and out of the country. I think that, you know, Kinross takes a bigger stake and hopefully it's at a much higher share price. You know, in talking to the company, you know, 90% of that money that they've raised is going to go into exploration. And I think that's phenomenal thing to hear, because, you know, we've just touched the oxides. they've poked holes in all the easy stuff, all the shallow stuff, but now they're going to go to that porphyry arc to the north. I'm guessing you might see some deeper holes underneath the oxides, hit on those sulfides that we saw. If you go all the way back to that phase one program, some terrific copper grades, like high percentages over decent widths. I think you're going to see them go after these things. And considering the strength of the system we see in the oxides and what the geophysics and the sampling show us from the surrounding area, I think that the probability here is quite good that their exploration will uncover something. It's just how big is probably the biggest question. So to me, these are excellent deals. It shows that there's interest. And I think it only helps when you have, you know, the likes of Filo, Jose Maria, you know, them continue to be successful, because I think that's going to push more companies like Kinross to take a look at Argentina and take a look at projects like Diblilos. You know, the other side of that 4% position is that it might be smallish, but it also leaves the door wide open for someone to come in over the top and take a much bigger position, hopefully at a higher price, or just take them completely out. So I really like the deal. Cashed up, exploration potential, you got the downside protection in the resource, and you've got a quality management team, all the things I like to see.
Yeah, Brian, and it's interesting because they also just penned a deal not too long ago with Teck Resources at their La Coipita project, which has also got a copper focus. So you got both Teck and Kinross coming into Argentina for the first time, and it could open the door for more majors to be in the area. There's also been a flurry of activity as far as the lithium projects there and development projects, and a lot of companies moving into that side, especially in Salta. But one of the things that John was excited about when we talked to him earlier this week was the brain trust between not just Kinross, but that utility company, Central Porto. They can help on things like permitting and on timelines and working with government agencies and obviously power generation for the development of the mine. So John said, what I'm most excited about is the brain trust between these two larger companies. On a larger discussion, would you like to see more junior companies partner with majors just for the sharing of knowledge?
I think so. I think it all depends. You know, usually for me, it's at what price and sort of what it brings. I think the best part about this deal is the fact that, you know, Abra's market cap is around 200 million, right? So this 4% position is not really dilutive. It's not, you know, the Kinross is paying, I think, fairly fair price to take a 4% position. I think in some companies it can be too early. The major can swallow up too big of a slice of the company and probably garner too much control. So it depends. It depends how the major is going to participate, because my other experience is that they can just be so slow in everything that they want to do. And so I like, whether if it's a joint venture or prospect generator, these deals with the majors, yeah, shared brain trust. But I also like, you know, the junior to be in that position, if that's the company I'm invested in, to have some control and to be able to push things forward, to be able to talk about the results that they're getting, all of these things. So depending on how the deal's structured, yeah, it can be a huge plus. And it opens it up to like a direct person or direct company that might acquire the company if things go well. But on the other side, I think I've seen enough deals that, you know, it can also be sort of a hindrance, depending on price and what the deal actually is.
Fair enough. Usually it is good, though, when you do get a major on board with a junior. But you are right. Hey, it depends on the stage, too, and how much the major is taking. Kinross, though, just going to be a 4% holder at the tail end of that investment. What'd you think about that PFS that Abra Silver released at the tail end of March? It had some fairly solid numbers around it, and the NPV did increase. What were some of your thoughts on that PFS?
Oh, I think it was excellent. You know, I think the fact that they included the reserves and that the reserves showed a high conversion rate. I think the CapEx numbers are all realistic. I basically view it as shovel ready. And yeah, I don't think you can say that for all the PFSs that are out there. Obviously, PFS is a lot much more detailed than a PEA usually, but I thought this one was exceptionally strong and shows the upside potential in that project. And I think maybe the market was a little bit over expecting from an economic standpoint. I'm not sure. Like some of the emails that I got following the deal is people were expecting these much higher NPVs, and I think given the CapEx and, you know, the tax regime that Argentina has right now, I think it was right in line with what at least what I expected. And the other side to that is if you consider what Milei is doing in Argentina, and if he does kind of move tax cuts to where they could go, you know, you're talking probably another $100 million capped onto that NPV just in the tax break. And so you add $100 million to that NPV at that, I forget what the baseline gold price and silver price were. I think it was like $1,924 for silver. That makes a huge deal. That makes them stand out even more. And so very robust economics. I think this is exactly what you want to see with that exploration upside. And so I was quite happy with the PFS and think that most majors look at that and think that, you know, this is basically shovel ready considering the type of mineralization and the deposit type it is.
Okay. But again, you like the exploration potential as well. So a lot for us to discuss there in terms of Abra Silver. And again, if people want more information, want to hear from the company, we interviewed them earlier this week. Moving out from just those couple company news events, I want to talk to you more about portfolio management then. Because look, no denying that we were in a 3 to 4 year bear market where pretty much all the stocks, even the quality ones, moved lower outside of just a handful of examples that bucked the trend. What are you doing now within your portfolio? Are you staying very concentrated? Are you taking on new positions? Give us some insights here.
Sure. And, you know, I'll talk about exactly what I'm doing with my portfolio, but I'll preface the whole idea of portfolio allocation starts with each individual investor. Investors need to take a look at their risk profile, their financial position, and kind of understand and think about how they want to allocate money, because there's a spectrum of risk across these types of companies. So now talking about my own portfolio allocation. So I'm constantly moving money around within the portfolio, but I do try to keep certain percentages in each of the, what I would say are three main categories. So exploration, development, and production / royalty. I like to keep probably 10 to 15% in exploration, 60 to 70 in developers, and then the remaining 20 to 30 in producers or royalty companies. And to me, this fits not only my knowledge level, but my risk profile in terms of how I like to deploy cash. So what I do is basically on this last blip, I've seen some profits come, and mainly in the developers, and developers have definitely outweighed some of the other categories. And if you look at the newsletter, I won't say which two exploration companies I just bought, but I did buy two. And so I allocated some of those profits from the developers into the exploration, because I do, like I said, want to keep 10 to 15% of the portfolio allocated to exploration, because that 10 or 15%, if you're lucky enough, can become a much bigger percentage if the companies find something. So my whole idea is that I'm moving cash into some of those new investments. This, so by chance, has to be on the riskier side, but it's because my portfolio had become out of weight into what I like to usually keep in terms of percentages. And so that can work the other way too. You know, the expiration works out, and then you take some of those and you buy some of the less risky stuff, some of the real stuff, some of the producers, the royalty companies, those types of companies where your downside protection, is really, really good, but your upside may not be as high. But over the long haul, those are the only companies really I think you can hold for multiple years without being too concerned about where the market is exactly headed.
Now, we've talked a lot about precious metals, and I feel like we were just talking about precious metals there. What about diversifying into other commodity sectors, other commodity stocks?
I think it's an absolute must. I think, you know, especially with my knowledge level and experience, you know, coming from steel manufacturing, that sort of engineering background, I guess I'm more comfortable with a wide range of metals. But I would say for most investors, being diversified across the spectrum of the different metals is a must. If you look at the bull markets that we've had over the last, let's say, 4 years, it's a great example. You go back to 2020, the precious metals were really the leading area where you're going to make money. That sort of flipped. You know, 2021 was more probably focused on nickel. There was a ton of money to be made. Then you go to 2022, and really the focus was probably on lithium. Lithium spikes, all the lithium companies. We have this, you know, proliferation of you know, 100 new lithium companies, and really there's a bull market there. And then this last year, 2023, I would say it was the year of uranium. And it's not that maybe necessarily any of these metals are sort of out of favor, but you can see the theme here is that each one sort of takes its turn, and the bull markets where you really make your money flip and they end. And so to me, you need to stay within your knowledge, which is a big thing. But I think you do need to be diversified. You need to be putting those profits into the sectors where the attention's not there, because I think for most of these metals, especially if you look at the big ones, not the small niche markets, but you know, gold, silver, copper, nickel, these things are all going to take their turns having bull markets, and you need to buy them when they're cheap. And the way you do that is taking profits in the bull market cycle and siphoning them through that. And so 100%, you need to be invested across the spectrum. And that's what I try to do.
So true. There's a lot of money that just rotates within different commodities. And that's why you see different commodities running at different times. Brian, thank you so much for your time on this weekend show. Very interesting to hear some of those deals, some of the recent news that caught not just our attention, but also the market's attention. Again, if you want to follow along with Brian, check out his website, Junior Stock Review, and subscribe to his premium letter to find out the stocks that he is holding. Brian, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Corey.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.